with Zatiar Shah and John Chang on Sportsnet 650.
We have a villain in our midst, and he is rocking a turtleneck.
I've been expecting you, Mr. Bond.
Our favorite Bond villain is back.
Yes.
Dmitry Filipovich. Honestly, I thought you looked fabulous.
I thought with I did that too. Turtleneck. I didn't know he'd be so divisive.
I know. I saw you at the game before. I'm like, man, looking dapper. Yeah. But you know how it is on social media. People love picking things apart. But I thought it was in good fun, I'd say.
I thought it was in great fun, and I think the Canucks were probably pretty happy because it felt like people were talking about that and their performance on the ice, and I'm sure that was a nice change.
A smoke screen.
Yes. Yeah,
yeah. A nice distraction.
Yes.
Who knew there was turtleneck Twitter?
Turtleneck Twitter apparently exists, yeah.
Who knows? But I love the that look, the jacket with the...
It's
pretty
slick.
Look. It's
yeah.
a slick yeah. look. It's a slick yeah. look, yeah. So
Dmitry's a man of style.
Yes.
Yeah. Compensates for you and I.
Well, you for sure.
Come on now.
I'm the guy wearing a Canadian tuxedo, so that tells you everything you need to know.
Well, I'm repping all the red because, you know.
You're always wearing a hat.
Yeah.
Or jerseys or sports team hoodies or long sleeves. Hey, that's just your style. You're like a sporty dude.
It's comfort based. It's value based with my money, but comfort based with my clothing. And so.
And it's on brand based on your job.
Yes, thank you. Yes, that's what I'm doing.
Staying on brand.
Yeah.
Now, Dmitry, the Canucks are in Toronto to take on the Toronto Maple Leafs. The game itself is inconsequential, really, for the Canucks in terms of where they are in the standings. Now, you could go the other way and say it's good for them to lose to get, bank less points for the draft.
Right.
But one conversation John and I have had this morning is, should the Canucks be looking to trade Chris Tanev, and does he fit with the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I think he definitely does. I mean, he fits with every team. He's a great player. Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely the Canucks should be looking to trade him. The thing with him is he's great when he's on the ice, but we're seeing it even this year that he has a tough time stringing together enough games for any team to feel kind of confident that when they trade for him, he's going to be there full time. And that's the big elephant in the room. So I think as soon as Tanev shows that he's healthy for like a 10, 15, even 20 game span, and he strings those games together, you need to trade him while his value is high.
But what's a realistic return, do you think? Now, the Leafs have, the reports are the only player that's off limits for sure is Austin Matthews. That's not to say the Canucks are going to get Marner or Nylander,
yes.
But what do you think would be a realistic return, or what would be an ideal return for the Canucks?
I think the Canucks should aim high first and foremost, because what we see is that the market is very favorable when you're trading the defensemen. Teams covet them very highly, and Tanev is still in his prime. He's still under 30 years old, and he's still under contract on a very favorable team-friendly figure. So all those things put together and what he could present, especially for a Leafs team that, they have a bunch of young, talented players and defensemen that can move the puck, but they don't have someone who's super reliable in their own zone. I guess Ron Hainsey would fit that bill, but he's obviously much older and he won't be around for long. So if the Canucks are trading Tanev, I think they should look for some sort of package involving prospects and picks, I guess. I mean, you really can't go wrong if you're looking for that.
Well, I mean, the guy that I bring up all the time is Timothy Liljegren. I'm not sure how willing they are to trade him, but I'd do it straight up almost. If you do give me Liljegren straight up, I'd do that trade. You'd want something else too, but would that be an acceptable return?
I think it would, and I think that would probably be a deal that would be favorable for both teams. I mean, I don't have any inside sources on this by any means, but that makes sense, obviously, because the Leafs are trying to win right now, and he fits into their timeline, and for the Canucks, having a young up-and-coming guy like that would be huge.
Taking a look here at the Eastern Conference as a whole, three teams currently out of the wild card spot, the Islanders, the Penguins, the Flyers, and I think that would surprise a lot of people looking at the start of the year. Probably a lot of experts and pundits had them being in a higher position than they are now. But how shocking is it that the Penguins still find a bit of struggle here as we have already turned the calendar over to 2018?
It's remarkable, and I think that it's a story we're talking about it right now, but generally speaking, I feel like it's flying under the radar just because people just sort of expect that at the end of the day, the Penguins will be there. I mean, they have too much talent to miss the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, it seems crazy, but as the weeks go on here and they don't seem to be improving it, people keep waiting for them to flip the switch, but we haven't seen many signs of life. I mean, their power plays look great, but beyond that, at 5-on-5, they really struggle this year as a team.
Do you think, I mean, there's been rumors coming out lately that Chris Letang could be on the block. Do you think that'd be the right move for this team to make, trying to ship out one of their most important defensemen to me?
Well, like with any deal, it depends what would be coming back, but I definitely wouldn't trade him just for the sake of trading him to shake things up, and you would need some sort of defense help back the other way. I mean, listen, we saw last year they won the title without Chris Letang, and it was sort of a makeshift Band-Aid blue line, but that's like winning the lottery. And when you win the lottery once, you don't expect that all of a sudden you figured out the formula for winning the lottery again, right?
winning the lottery here in Vancouver, you get a lot of people excited. Just with the World Juniors happening right now and Rasmus Dahlin playing the way he is, that's just it's a term that you want to use carefully, I suppose.
Oh, man, when you watch that guy play, the imagination just runs wild.
Yeah, it's unreal. And if the Canucks do trade for Liljegren and somehow end with Dahlin, man, that just accelerates everything. Knocking on some wood here. Do we have any wood in the studio?
Well, yeah, I'm just going to knock myself in the head. But
there you go.
The reality with Rasmus Dahlin is you can't overhype him. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, we do get on the draft hype machine, but you watch that kid play, and the hype is real.
Yeah, and I think Ray Ferraro has been putting it best during these games where he's sort of, listen, there's going to be these Nicholas Lidstrom comps, mm-hmm. and they're sometimes lazy just because they're both Swedish and they both play the same position. But there is this sort of effortless way to his game where it looks like he could easily play 25, 26 minutes a night and not even break a sweat. Like, all of his motions are just so smooth, whereas some guys you can clearly tell they're like laboring out there and you can't use them too much. So he's a freak.
I mean, he's the perfect new age defenseman, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. He has size, he can skate, offensive instinct, but he's so cool, like you said. To me, the thing that stands out the most, and it is why the Lidstrom comparison gets made, he's just so calm with the puck. It's like he slows the game down when he's going at a high pace.
Yeah, and he has it on a string. I mean, he's already shown that he's very comfortable dancing around on his own blue line when he's the last guy back. And, we don't see that often in the NHL, because if you turn that over, all of a sudden it's coming back the other way and it could be in your own end, and guys are very reluctant to do so. But he has this youthful enthusiasm that I hope the NHL doesn't beat out.
Right, and you see what value a young defenseman like that could have. Mm-hmm. Look at Boston, what Charlie McAvoy is doing. Now, a different defenseman, he's not as dynamic as, say, what Rasmus Dahlin is, but a big guy, can skate, can move the puck well, can do a bit of everything, and he really stabilized that defense all of a sudden. Now, all of a sudden, the Bruins are actually one of the best teams in the East, and a lot of that has to do with the defense.
Yes, yeah, 100%.
100%. We talked about how maybe the Penguins are still in a disappointing pace at this point of the year, but let's look at the Colorado Avalanche. They're now just 2 points out of their own wild card spot. This is a team that obviously had so much struggles last year. Then they get rid of Matt Duchene. Nathan MacKinnon has come alive ever since. What is going on in Colorado?
So before the season, I wrote for Sportsnet.ca, I wrote my five most interesting players this season. Mm-hmm. And Nathan MacKinnon was the first one on that list. Mm. And I've been waiting for this for years. I've been all aboard the Nathan MacKinnon bandwagon. Yeah. And for years, I mean, the talent has obviously been there. If you watch him play, I mean, anyone could watch him play for the first time without knowing anything else and instantly think he's the best player on the ice at all times. He's just so fast, so powerful, so good with the puck. And for whatever reason, the numbers were never there. He was great in his rookie season, but then he had some injuries, he had some poor shooting luck. And this year, it's really come all together for him. And that Avalanche offense, as a result, has been, I believe, top five in the league, which is surprising based on how they played last year, but maybe it shouldn't have been based on how much young talent they've accrued in the draft over the years.
How important is Mikko Rantanen to that forward group? He's 20 years old, but man, he's a big guy, so strong to move off the puck, and he's been certainly very impressive to me so far.
Yeah, and I remember in the pre-draft process, he was billed as one of those guys that would be sort of more NHL-ready than a lot of his peers, and you know, he came to the league right away, had some growing pains, obviously, but this year he's looked great, and that top line with Rantanen and MacKinnon and Landeskog is as good as it gets.
How bad does this make Matt Duchene seem, though? Because, I mean, he's really struggled in Ottawa.
Yeah.
I think he has almost the same amount of points as Samuel Girard, who's a defenseman who has, like, only 5 points or something like that with the Avalanche. And he's good. I'm a big Sam Girard fan. I've been one of his biggest fans for a while. But how bad does this make Matt Duchene look?
I really feel bad for the guy. And we're going to talk about Mike Hoffman here in a bit, and this is a good segue. This is why I'm a broadcasting professional.
Very good.
But,
like it.
But it's really tough to evaluate anything going on in Ottawa right now, just because both in terms of their save percentage and their shooting percentage as a team, it's just gone completely off the rails. So everyone's numbers look horrible as a result. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes, you know, it just happens. It's one of those seasons, and that's obviously not an excuse, and they need to play better. But it's really tough to evaluate, because I don't think Matt Duchene is nearly as bad of a player as his numbers right now would indicate.
No, he's probably not. But what happens is he worth what you gave up to get him, right? And Matt Duchene is a good player, but what if he's just what we've seen the last couple of years, a guy who gets you 20 goals, 50 points? It's nothing to scoff at, but it's not something you give up 10 assets to get.
Right, and the fortunate thing for the Senators here is, even if they do kind of push the eject button, Matt Duchene is still under contract for another year, I believe. So maybe it's going to be tough to kind of save face and trade him this season, but maybe in the summer or next year towards the deadline, they'll still at least be able to recoup some assets if things keep going this way.
Right. And you brought up Mike Hoffman, something we kind of threw out. The three top players forward-wise who could be available, at least according to the rumors, Evander Kane, who will most likely get dealt. He's a UFA. Max Pacioretty in Montreal, and Mike Hoffman in Ottawa. Hoffman has two more years left on his deal, around $5 million per year. Pacioretty, $4.5 million next season, and then he's a UFA. Of those three players, which one do you think is the best player and the one a contender should be most after?
I think Pacioretty is the best player. He does the most. I mean, you can really play him in all three facets of the game. He's a great penalty killer. And he's always had these seasons where his shooting percentage really ebbs and flows. And when the pucks aren't going in the net, especially in that market, people are very critical of him. But if you look at his numbers, he's basically been a lock for 30 to 35 goals, just money in the bank, which in today's NHL is very impressive. So he's had a slow start to the year. I know he scored a goal last night, and I think that he's going to turn it around. So if I was a team looking for Max Pacioretty, I would try to make that trade as soon as possible, mostly to acclimate him with my own roster, but also because if he starts scoring some goals now, all of a sudden his value is going to go up quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I think Pacioretty is just super impressive to me coming off a 35-goal season. Yep. He has the 1 year left on his contract. I think he's the guy that might also have perhaps the most to prove considering the disappointment that the Montreal Canadiens have been dealing with all year. So I feel like maybe there's a chip on his shoulder that's perhaps hasn't been there in the past. And I feel like if a team was to acquire him right now, they'd get a guy who's probably very ready for a new, fresh start somewhere else.
Well, it also doesn't look that good on the Canadiens, considering that for years their two best players were actually on really team-friendly contracts, and Carey Price and Max Pacioretty. And obviously now Carey Price's contract is going to kick in, and that's going to be a bit of an anchor. And Max Pacioretty himself, I mean, he's been playing what, $4.5 million, you said, for a handful of years now, and he's going to cash in next summer. So, yeah, if I was a contender, I would be looking for him, though, because you're right, you do get him for two playoff runs as opposed to just the one. Was it Evander Kane? I mean, he'll be a bit cheaper as a result, but he'll be gone this summer, and you don't really want to pick up the tab on that.
Yeah, and with Evander Kane, there's also the baggage. You're not quite sure how he's going to fit in with the locker room dynamic because it hasn't worked out in Buffalo and it didn't work out in Atlanta. And at some point, the trend is what it is, right? So maybe it's not as bad as we think it is on a good team, but that's why I'm reluctant as a contender to trade for Kane.
Well, and I think Mike Hoffman, the guy we haven't mentioned here yet, is the guy I would be targeting because he's sort of a happy medium between those two. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be a bit cheaper than Max Pacioretty, especially since we've heard rumblings. I believe Elliot Friedman or Chris Johnson was reporting the other day that the Senators, it might not be a hockey move as much as a financial move. They're looking to shed salary, and that might be the mandate from the ownership. And if that's the case, all of a sudden they're going to be asking for less as long as they're not accepting money back the other way. So if you're a contender, Mike Hoffman, you get him for two more years after this one. He's still in his prime. He's had a bit of a rough go this year, but he's proven to be a 25-ish goal scorer per season. So that'd be a nice asset.
He's the guy I actually like the most. Pacioretty is the best player out of the three. There's no question about it. But the fact that you get two more years for Hoffman, and he's versatile. He can play the wing, and he can play center. Mm-hmm. And he's actually a really good two-way player. Yeah. He's a really good defensive player, too. He's one of those guys that I think has been underrated throughout his career so far. And part of it has to do with, he was on waivers at one point. He ended up coming in and making the team. He's sort of flown under the radar. Mm-hmm. But I think he's a really good hockey player. And whatever team gets him may end up with a really good player down the road.
And the thing that I like about him is, he's one of the best one-shot scorers we have in this league, and his shooting percentage doesn't necessarily look that great, but it's because if you look, a lot of his goals come from very far out, and it's sort of like Patrick Laine in a sense, or Ilya Kovalchuk back in the day, where it's not often you see forwards shooting that effectively from that far out, basically from the position the defenseman would occupy. And that's huge, especially on the power play, because all of a sudden now as we're seeing that teams are shifting to more four forward, one defenseman sets on the power play, Mike Hoffman becomes extremely valuable because he can play the point for you there. And he stretches the defense out a little bit. So there's a lot of things you can do with him.
And before this year, his numbers were only getting better. He went from 48 to 59 to 61 points last season. He is off to a slower start this time around. Something more that's recently developing out in Calgary is the fact that Jaromír Jágr could be perhaps terminating his contract with the Calgary Flames.
Yes.
Obviously hasn't turned out the way either parties sort of enjoyed, but if that does indeed happen, is this the end of the road for a Hall of Famer here?
I hope not. I'd like to see him go out on better terms than this, and I think he can still play and still contribute to a team, but this was sort of the concern in the summer when people were wondering why he was still available and why anyone hadn't signed him yet. When you bring him into your lineup, you really need to sort of, especially whatever line he's playing on, you need to cater it around him because at this stage of his career, there's only a certain pace he can play at. And it's really tough for a lot of other guys to play that slow, especially as we're seeing the NHL transition to a faster game. So he would need to fall into the right circumstance, but it's out there. I haven't necessarily given a lot of thought to who it could be, but I'm sure he can still play in the NHL. He's
maybe like a glorious return back to Pittsburgh. I don't know. I mean, it feels like anyone could succeed if you're playing with guys like Crosby or Malkin.
Yeah, I mean, they might have to put him on the blue line if they bring him back.
Now, before we move on. I do want to ask about the Habs a second. I also want to ask about the Canucks because there's a lot going on with the Canucks this week based on what Lindon had to say or did not have to say to the media on Tuesday. But as far as the Habs go, how does Mark Bergevin keep his job after this season? Like, I mean, I get it. Him and Molson are tight. I get the ownership angle. But any sort of third-party evaluation of the job he's done, how can you come away with anything other than he's been bad at his job?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the listeners at home and on the radio can't see what's going on right here because this is a visual medium. But when you asked me that, it was just an exasperated shrug.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I don't know how to vocalize those concerns. But no, you're right. I mean, it's been really tough, and he's sort of kind of attached himself to this roster. It's going to be really tough to get out of it. And all of a sudden, if they start shifting part, if moving away parts like Pacioretty, it's going to be tough for him to come back. But I mean, you could have said that for the past couple of years now, and he's obviously has quite a bit of job security in that market, which is surprising, I guess.
Well, I mean, look at their team. When he got the job, they actually had a pretty solid team. They had a really good core of young players and old players, some decent prospects coming through, and now all of a sudden, you barely have anything other than Victor Mete coming up on defense. Mm-hmm. And I guess Ryan Pauling, somebody else you keep an eye on, he has some potential play for Team USA at the World Juniors. But other than that, there's nobody coming through the ranks. Weber's going to be in the twilight of his career really soon. Yep. He's not almost there already. The Carey Price contract is going to be an albatross in a few years. So where's the hope for Habs fans, whether it's the short term or the long term?
I mean, just look at what they did this summer with that Carl Alzner contract.
Right.
I mean, they haven't shown a lot of forward thinking and a lot of planning for the future, and that's obviously kind of coming to roost right now.
Yeah, their blue line to me is one of the slowest units in the league as a whole. Things might be a little bit better now, believe it or not, in terms of speed only, now that Shea Weber's sort of out of the picture. But obviously, they want him back sooner rather than later. The wheels have just come off in Montreal, it seems, there. Really quickly, before we move to Canucks topics, the Winnipeg Jets. If we're talking about wheels falling off,
right.
Mark Scheifele being gone for the 6 to 8 weeks that he was obviously hit with, the shoulder injury. Do you think the Jets are in a position here to regress a little bit? Because they're second in the Central, 23-11-7, but they just recently lost. They're 5-3-2 in their last 10.
Yeah, they'll regress a little bit. I still think they have enough talent, especially up front, to make up for that loss. I mean, obviously, whenever you lose a guy who's as valuable a contributor as Scheifele, it's going to be impossible to fully replace it. But they can cobble together some stuff, and they just got Byfuglien back from injury. So I still like a lot of the talent there, and assuming the goaltending holds up as it has so far, I don't really see them falling off. I mean, that Central Division's pretty tight, especially up top with the Blues and the Wild, and the Blackhawks are playing better, and the Predators, obviously. So it's going to be a dogfight, but I think the Jets will remain because their 5-on-5 performance as a team has actually been going up as the year has gone along, kind of sneakily. So I like what they have going on over there.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need to tell me about Blake Wheeler. I love Blake Wheeler. I think he is such an underrated he is a dominant winger, can do everything. And I think we're finally seeing that from him this season.
And he's one of the few guys. I mean, we went through this with Louis Erickson, and there's been countless guys in the past where everyone places the underrated tag on him, and then everyone says it so often that they actually become overrated.
Right.
But people have been saying it for Blake Wheeler, and I still believe it's the case. I still don't think people truly appreciate it. I mean, anytime you look at, like, whatever, the past 3-4 years, the top 5 point producers, goal scorers, what have you, Blake Wheeler's always near the
and
top of the list.
And his underlying numbers are ridiculously good.
Yeah, the Jets are awesome whenever he's on the ice.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think the numbers lie when it comes to Blake Wheeler. Now, for the Canucks, before we get out of here, the big question is, we all know the trade stuff. We assume that's going to happen with Vanek and Gudbranson. The big question is, will Jim Benning be the GM next season? None of us have the answer to that. But the question really is, should he be back next season? And if you evaluate the job he's done in 4 years, where do you think the organization ultimately could come out on that?
It's definitely been improving. I was a big-time critic in the first couple of years. I thought, especially the trade deadline 2 years ago when they kept Ham Hughes and the other guys, that was a big miscalculation on their part, and they really wasted a chance to get some good assets. I really like what they did last year when they traded away Hansen and Burrows and got some young assets there. And ultimately, I'd like to see what they do at this year's trade deadline before making that decision. I understand people always want to kind of figure out what's going on and get some clarity, but this is going to be a big one here because the Canucks don't have too many assets, but with guys like Branson and Vanek, they could potentially have some intriguing trade chips there. So if he handles it well, and with all the kind of draft stuff that's been happening, and obviously we're enjoying Pettersson here at the World Juniors, and Brock Besser's impressing, all of a sudden there's a case to be made that he should be given a bit of a longer leash.
Yeah, really quickly with Brock Besser, obviously NHL's not going to the Olympics. I had a spirited discussion here past few days. Would Brock Besser make Team USA's roster if you were in charge of it, if they were going to Pyeongchang?
I'd have to look at it, but it'd be based on how he's playing right now, it'd be pretty hard-pressed not to bring him, especially because you never know when you might need a goal, and there's very few players in the league right now that are a better bet to score that than him. So he'd be an intriguing asset to bring.
Yeah, it's funny because a guy who got a lot of criticism for being on a fake roster that ESPN put together, so it doesn't mean anything, was Brandon Saad. Mm. But the analytics guys love Brandon Saad because his underlying numbers are through the roof. Like, he is a really good two-way player.
Yes. Yeah, no, he definitely swings the ice territorially. I think Besser could be one of those, at least like a 13th forward or something, but all of a sudden maybe an injury happens or they need a goal desperately, and all of a sudden he moves his way up the lineup.
Great stuff, Dmitry Filipovich, the PDO cast. What else are you working on for Sportsnet.ca?
I got an article out today about Mike Hoffman and why he's an interesting trade chip. So it's basically, I mean, if you guys listen to this today, feel free to click, but you don't have to read it because you've already gotten all the good stuff here.
I'm sure you get better details reading
it. Yeah, it's a little deeper. It's a little deeper. But other than that, kind of usual, follow me at Dim Filipovich on Twitter, and that's all.
Awesome. Taking over the world and fighting James Bond.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Taking over the world one villain at a time. There Great stuff. Really appreciate Dmitry. We'll talk again next week.
Sportsnet 650.